www.ccc.org.
We're committed to a campaign starting right now to do a people's initiative to rescind Columbus Day in the state of Colorado.
The Transform Columbus Day Alliance is an international coalition of over 80 social justice organizations who are committed to challenging the traditional ethnocentric views of Columbus as pioneer and sole discoverer of the Americas. The Alliance works towards the transformation of the Columbus Day holiday into a celebration that calls for a future of the Americas without racism, exploitation, or state or corporate domination. The Alliance has been protesting the Columbus Day Parade in Denver for 15 years. 2004 was the fourth year in a four-direction cycle to transform Columbus Day into a mutually respectful interaction between all peoples. The weekend's events began Friday evening with the fourth annual Four Directions All Nations March. Thousands of people marched from the Four Directions to Cuernavaca Park on the banks of the South Platte River, where the Cheyenne and Arapaho once gathered. The marches converged as the sun went down. After marching around the circle, people gathered for a program of speeches and musicians.
Thank you all for having the courage, for believing, for having the energy to come out and to march together to demonstrate to this city and to these communities that we are not going away and we will be here until there is no longer Columbus Day celebrated in this city.
Sell nothing, so I'm gonna spray like rain. Ancestors told us that this time would come, human secrets revealed when the clock wind down.
Whatever their religion, whatever their tribe, people of goodwill need to stand together and say it loud. We don't want anybody pointing to Christopher Columbus as a hero, because he wasn't, and his name ought to be erased from the history books.
We're committed to a campaign starting right now to do a people's initiative to rescind Columbus Day in the state of Colorado.
At 9 o'clock, we're at the parade. We're going to the parade. Convoy of conquest. Some of us will choose that example of Gandhi, of King, that example that says, with our integrity, with our honor intact, we are going to stand against racism in the streets of Denver, and we're willing to go to jail. We're willing to risk our liberty, our personal safety, our personal comfort in order to make this statement to the world. We ask you to join us.
Saturday morning, Indians and their allies gathered at the state capitol and then marched to intercept the Columbus Day Parade.
Hey, hey! Transform Columbus Day! We're all about Italian pride. We don't celebrate genocide!
The police stopped the parade a couple blocks before the intersection of Blake and 19th Streets to keep the two groups apart. In a series of actions that had been carefully scripted with the Denver Police Department, those who were willing to be arrested occupied the intersection to block the parade. Police arrested 233 demonstrators without force and loaded them onto sheriff's department buses. Nearly 1,000 protesters lined the streets, cheering those arrested. The arrests began shortly before 10:30 and took about 45 minutes. The police replaced the barriers and lined the streets to await the parade. Motorcyclists from the parade formed a barrier inside the lines of police officers, gunning their engines and sounding their horns. Parade Marshal Congressman Tom Tancredo led the parade in a Hummer. The parade included a cement mixer, people in SUVs decorated with crepe paper, a Denver fire truck, two antique tractors on trailers pulled by semi-trucks, two other semi-trucks and a few other vehicles, some pulling trailers with kids who pelted the demonstrators with candy. There were no floats, marching bands, or big balloons, or any other spectators. When the parade passed the intersection, the demonstrators walked back to the Denver City and County Building for a rally to await the release of those arrested.
You know, the most important thing in my experience that our ceremonies teach us, that we cannot live our lives in fear. We must not live our lives in fear. That they can bring 600 riot police out, but if we're standing together with one another, shoulder to shoulder, with these sacred items, with our ancestors, there's nothing to fear. We are home. There's nothing to fear.
The first of the arrestees was released about 1, and releases continued for about 45 minutes. The rally continued as American Indian Movement member and Professor Glenn Morris explained that Columbus Day is not about Italian pride.
When Columbus Day originated in the minds of some colonizers in 1893 at the World's Fair in Chicago, America hated Italians. America was killing Italians. America was lynching Italians. So why did they use Columbus as this icon for the World's Fair, the 400th anniversary of his arrival? Because he's not a symbol of Italian pride. For them, he was a symbol of colonialism. And he still is. He still is. We know that that idea in 1893 is alive and well today. Some of you may have seen an article a couple of weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal by Robert Kaplan. The title of it was Indian Country. Right now in Iraq, the military of the United States uses certain jargon. And any country that's not under U.S. military control in Iraq is called Indian Country. It's still called Indian Country by the U.S. military. And anyone who doesn't go along with the military program of the United States Army over there, they're told that they've gone off the reservation. That's the term they use. You're off the reservation. And any military person who gets too friendly with the local Iraqis, well, they've gone native.
Well, let's give everyone a big hand. Everyone that wants to.
And coming up next on Free Radio, a bit late, but here we are, Bathurst Spears Broadside, Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. Where can you find him? Let's take a look. It's the March 24th, 2005 show. Stay with us.
Chance to play
and sing it.
I figure it's about the happiest sound going down today. The message may not move me or mean a great deal to me, but hey, it feels so groovy to say. I think the mamas and the papas Sunset Strip in L.A. And they got a good thing going when the words don't get in the way.
Yeah.
And when they're really wailing, Michelle and Kev are sailing. Hey, they really nail me to the Chip Dad's way. His Chris Ted
I could really get it on that scene. I think I could say something if you know what I mean. But if I really say it, the radio won't play it unless I lay it between the lines.
And welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is a twice-weekly show that's been going on for about 10 years now. Who knows when it'll stop, when I tire out, or when the FCC gets cranky, or who knows, when something better comes along. We go for 2 hours tonight, I do, and hopefully with you and some of you out there calling in and joining me. The call-in number is 427-3772. The topics that I cover range from the Iraqi war to the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, but it's mostly about the local impact of what's going down, whether it's international, national, or, and that is my preference, what's going on locally in terms of civil and human rights for folks who are, I guess some would say, on the margins. As say, people are put on the margins of the human race by the nature of the system we live under. If you're interested in giving your own account or commenting on what you hear on the air, of course, the phone number, as I said, is 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC. You can also jump on Pages in Color, a website where I'm keeping an occasional monitor, www.pagesincolor. And you can also call in off-air, leave a message if you want, in case you're a little bit shy about going on the air. Maybe you want to talk about something before you go on the air. Maybe you have some cases of abuse by authorities that you don't wish immediately broadcast out of apprehension or some other concerns. The number to call then is 423-4833, 423-4833, also known as the HUF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group that I'm working with, concerned with restoring civil rights for everybody, but particularly for poor people. That's the name of it, and that's the phone number. And that's the way to get to it, and also the way to get to me and leave messages for the show, 423-HUF. So, coming up on today's show, a number of things. Mike Seymour, a man who lives in his vehicle, who's been on the air before and who's spoken very outspokenly about how he's been pursued and harassed by some prejudiced locals, some particular police officials, or I should say police, well, I guess an officer is an official in a way, though not really, policemen, police people, policers, police arraignees, and park rangers and things of that sort, simply for living in his vehicle. He's going to give an update on what's going down with that. I'm also hoping to hear from Roger Minch. Roger is the man who was convicted of cultivating and possessing medical marijuana and faces 7 years in jail when he goes back to sentencing in early May. You can read more about that story if you want to go to the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. You can check that out if you want. In fact, I'm going to actually check it out even as we speak so we can see what's cooking on that website, if I can get on it. Sometimes it's a little hard to get on. And, interesting stuff coming down. Looking at the Indie Media website, I notice 12 p.m. to midnight tomorrow, anniversary of the war and U.S. occupation of Iraq, Critical Mass Radio Network, March 25th. Free Radio Santa Cruz, Critical Mass Radio, with a bunch of other radio stations, Free Radio Dallas, San Diego, August Sound Coalition New York, Enemy Combatant Radio Bay Area, Portland IMC Web Radio. There's going to be a day of broadcast from noon to almost midnight about Iraq. That should be something to listen to. You can hear it here at www.freakradio101.1fm. So check it out. Tune in. If you want to get even more active, you can check out the there's an Out Now Vigil. It's happening every Friday. That's kind of moved from where it used to be at the, it's moved from where it used to be, which was downtown at Ocean and Water Streets, where the gas stations kind of confronted each other across the streets near the courthouse. And it's moved up to the North Branch of 40 Avenue overpass above Highway 1 from 4:30 to 6:30. I guess it used to be from 5 to 6. Now it's going to be a longer period of time. The indie media commentary says the right to vigil peacefully on the Branch 40 Drive overpass above Highway 1 was upheld last week on Friday. I think they mean, this is for March 18th. But I think that there are going to be people also on March 25th. Because I think it's a continuing announcement. And the point of this commentary was that the Highway Patrol, which had been hassling people, has now asserted that it's your right to be here and noted that the CHP thinks there's no problem at rush hour on Fridays since the traffic is going so slowly. I think that was Joe Williams who got that admission from a California Highway Patrol officer about two weeks ago now. Haven't heard from Joe for a while. And Joe, if you're listening, call in. Like to get an update on how war resistor counseling is going. That's something Joe Williams does. He also ran, of course, for the U.S. Congress in November against Sam Farr, the anti-war activist come lately. I guess he's not even an anti-war activist. If you look on his website, at least a couple weeks ago, you couldn't find a word about anti-war activity at all, but tons and tons about military activity. Although, I have to say, Farr has signed the Woolsey letter, which asks that there be a timetable to get out of Iraq, at least. And actually, it may do more than that. It may actually ask for beginning of withdrawal of troops from Iraq, which is, of course, considered a revolutionary proposal for many, though for some of us it was what we wanted to do the day after they went in. Now all we have to do is convince the Santa Cruz City Council to at least make a statement in that regard that might reflect the consensus of folks in Santa Cruz. I really believe that there's probably a stronger sentiment for getting out of Iraq and stopping those corpses from coming home, and that the mass diversion of funding into a killing machine and a foreign occupation than there is for maintaining it or waiting around to see what should happen next, because we owe it to those Iraqis to keep hanging around over there until we can fix things up. I just can't buy that excuse. Anyway, so that's several things are happening tomorrow. And there's all-day radio, and there's also this vigil on Friday evening. And there's also a meeting of Students Against the War on campus for those of you who are interested in checking out what's going on up in the hill. The Students Against the War are meeting 5 to 7, Bay Tree Conference Room D, which is right above the bookstore. I think it's the third or fourth floor above the Bay Tree bookstore. If I have my buildings right, I'm reading off the Indy Media, so that is where they're meeting, but I'm a little bit muddy on which building is which, but it is Bay Tree Conference Room D, and it's 5 to 7, Students Against War. They had an interesting teach-out, was it a week or two ago up there? I did some reporting on that teach-out for Free Radio on one of my shows, so I encourage people to keep tuned to them. I only wish they would keep tuned to us. They don't seem to be showing up in any numbers down here, but maybe that will change. I guess there's been sort of a semester break or a quarter break or whatever it is at the campus, and so maybe things will get more active and more interactive as we move into April and May. At least that is my hope. One of the things I do on this show, which doesn't happen generally on other shows that I'm aware of, though I'm not a constant listener to Free Radio, so please correct me if I'm wrong, is coverage of the Santa Cruz City Council's latest shenanigans around excluding critics. And, of course, this means excluding me, of course, but it also means excluding other critics. I've been talking about how they have been denying the public the right to speak for reasonable amounts of time at city council, have any access to actually the so-called oral communications period, the time when you can actually go and talk on an item that isn't on the agenda, say something about the community, say something to the council you wish were on the agenda. That's usually at 7 o'clock every other Tuesday. But Mayor Rotkin has used the sort of the new Kennedy approach, or the old Kennedy approach. Kennedy was the prior mayor, and not a good one, at least for many of us concerned with civil rights locally and for a public process locally. But Rotkin's been using Kennedy's old approach of crunching everything into the afternoon agenda and eliminating the evening agenda, and so that instead of putting oral communications where you might think it should be, at the beginning of the afternoon agenda, so people could know when to come, the afternoon agenda starts at 3 o'clock, he has been putting it at the end of the agenda at a time uncertain. So you have to wait through the entire agenda to be able to talk for 3 minutes. Or you have to keep watching the show. If you have cable television, you can do that if you have the time. In order to determine where they are in the agenda, because usually he'll say something like, we're having oral communications, this is what he said, I believe, at the Tuesday session, at 6:30 in the evening, or when the afternoon session ends, whichever comes first. So if you go at 6:30, the whole session may have ended, you might not be able to speak. On the other hand, You may not have to watch the whole session, and the session may go on past 6:30, in which case you can go at 6:30 and speak, but you have to kind of keep tabs on what's going on. Not only be there at 6:30, but be aware of what's happening before 6:30. It's really a very exhausting process for those who want to communicate to the community and to the council in a public way. And hence, it violates the Brown Act, in my view, which is the act that supposedly guarantees us the right to be able to keep an eye on what the council does and have a voice in council, at least in terms of input. We don't get to vote, of course. It's a so-called representative government there. But we at least should be able to speak. Now, what I'm going to play first here is an exchange that happened 2 weeks ago. It was March 8th, during the oral communications session that I wasn't able to wait for, because the oral communications, again, involve waiting and waiting and waiting. I spoke earlier in the council session and apparently prompted some repressive legislation 2 days ago, which passed, and we're going to talk about that as well. But the interesting interchange that I guess may have given the council its protective cover and its justification or pretext for going ahead to cut back on public comment time was Michael Tomasi, who is a veteran, kind of a feisty little guy, who is kind of begins every statement by a statement that he's such and such battalion, such and such brigade, and king of the trolls and so forth. He takes up a certain amount of time by saying things that are repetitive and not really pertinent to the particular agenda item in question. And that, instead of ruling him out of order, as Mayor Rotkin could do, and say, Mike, we've heard that before, stick to the point, make your point, Rotkin allows Tomasi to go on when some may have wondered why. And the answer is because what he really wants to do is not silence Tomasi, although that's going to happen too. He wants to silence those who he really doesn't want to hear from, people like myself and other critics who are actually making substantive criticisms of the council's failure around the Iraqi war, failure to pass or even introduce or consider any kind of rent control, destruction of citizens' police review, the destruction of rent control for mobile home parks, the zippity-doo-dah, zip-it-through process around the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel. All this stuff the council wants to pass by without commentary, and people like me, I don't know how many of them there are, but there are some people who share my view, don't want that to happen. I want to be able to speak about it, and we do. And we also want to talk about deficiencies and items that they bring up that they'd like to have quickly passed without much discussion, either through the consent agenda, which is the agenda that they pass as a huge, as a block with one vote, usually 10 to 15 or 20 items, or as an administrative item, which means that you do get to talk for a longer period of time. It is raised individually, but it's considered to be less than what's called a public hearing, which they hold on legal changes, grants, things of that sort, so-called more weighty issues, although, you know, one person's weighty issue is another person's feathery issue. So, you know, you figure it out. Anyway, here's what happened at Oral Communications when a member of the public spoke up and criticized Michael Tomasi for speaking at City Council during the Oral Communications period. She had this to say.
Mike, you spoke last time, so we're going to let her go first, if that's all right.
All right, you know, he's there. Yes, ma'am. Love you.
Okay. Mayor Rodkins and members of the City Council, I strongly urge the City Council to establish very strict rules and regulations regarding public comment at these meetings. Name-calling, verbal abuse, or abusive language directed to the City Council or anyone else in the meeting room should not be tolerated. The speaker must stick to the matter on the agenda and not go off on tangents like Mr. Tomasi, which is totally non-productive. If the rules and regulations are not followed, then the speaker must immediately leave the room and not be allowed to speak again during the afternoon or evening meeting or both. The local taxpayers' money should not be wasted on nonsensical and repetitive comments made by the speaker, particularly with all the crises the city is facing. And Mr. Tomasi, I do not appreciate being allowed for you to rudely make outbursts of comments of what the speaker says at the podium. I believe we deserve respect for what we have said. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments.
Stick around, lady. Stick around. Don't leave.
Before we hear Michael's response, I want you to notice something, that if anybody else had directed a comment to somebody in the audience by name, they would have been ruled out of order. But since this was a middle-class person objecting to a homeless person, and a rather colorful and irascible homeless person at that, and one, I think, who has taken up more than a share of amount of time at the mics talking about things that I don't think are terribly relevant to council business, but nonetheless, the mayor had nothing to say to interrupt her, he didn't ask her to sign in or say what her name was, although you are certainly allowed not to speak your name at the mic. Rodkin's usual approach is to demand people's names. So it's kind of an unusual process that the mayor went through with this particular speaker. And considering what happened 2 weeks later when Rodkin came forward with the proposal to severely limit public comment, not oral communication, which is what this speaker was talking about, the period of time when you could actually talk about anything not on the agenda, but rather communication on particular agenda items, it's, to me, a typical example of how differential and two-faced the council is, how selective in their responses. Actually, it's the mayor we're talking about here, but since no member of the council held the mayor to account and said, you know, and said, why is it you're applying one standard to one speaker and another standard? You'll hear a different standard, I believe, applied to Tomasi when he comes up. But even if it's not here in this particular case, it's frequently done with other people if they are critical of something the council is doing. Whereas if they're doing something the council likes, of course, they're not going to be interrupted, which, of course, is a violation of the Brown Act. Because the Brown Act specifically provides you cannot prohibit criticism of the council, and that's exactly what the council is doing through manipulation of the rules. Let's hear what Tomasi says.
The council, not members of the public.
She addressed me.
Doesn't matter. You should address you.
Mayor Rodkin, City Council.
We missed a little of that, but that's, you hear Rodkin interrupting Tomasi to say that he has to address the council and not address her, even though she, in fact, addressed him, and he pointed that out. And Rodkin, of course, who wasn't going to criticize or interrupt her in any way, is prepared to have him arrested and thrown out and escorted out, and has done that before, if Tomasi has the temerity to respond to what she has to say and to demand the same kind of treatment, the same kind of tolerance.
My name is Mike Tomasi, King of the Trolls, of A Battery, 6th Battalion, 14th Artillery.
a walkie-talking miracle from Vietnam, the greatest fur observer in the history of the United States, and a real live hero. And when I come into this room and some lady comes up and tells me that I can't put my 3 minutes of any way that I so want to, I can tell that lady to jump in the lake and take her little butt home. Because, you know, she doesn't need to be around us. So-called activists. Now, ma'am, sir, I came to sing you a little song. It's called a rap song. It goes like this. I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I go down to the Santa Cruz Police Department. I salute them with respect and dignity and all the love that I can throw at them. I get up and I salute everybody in this town. And I say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag correctly. And when you say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, Mr. Mayor, you say, people of Santa Cruz, please stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. They stand up, you say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And, sir, if you can bring your people in here to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, which is Mr. Dignity right there, they can absolutely show a little respect for the people of Santa Cruz and every veteran of every nation that united as one for peace, including a man called Jesus Christ. Now, believe me, sir, you can step on my head. You can take the sight from my left eye. You can break my hand. You can throw me in jail. You can throw me in the psycho ward. You can do anything you want to me, but that doesn't equal anything but love. And I'll tell you something, man. The next character that attacks me in here, mister, you got to kick him out, because I have every right to say anything that I so-called desire. And I will leave with this for that woman, for our federal government, and for our Congressman Sam Farr. Mr. Keeley, ye, though we have walked through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil. Not because we're the evilest son of a guns in the valley, because we're Americans. And I'll tell you something, this town, this police department is the only one with any dignity. The only thing they do is follow orders from you. So please,
your
understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's not on any agenda item. It's not about any agenda item. It is oral communication. So if somebody wants to go up there and sing a song, although Rotkin has stopped that in the past, or he stopped silence, standing up there and standing in silence. He's not allowed that to happen. What Tomasi does makes me anxious, because it solidifies opinion behind the idea that it's okay to cut back public comment, because who wants to hear the same rather disjointed, contradictory tirade every week? And it's also true that Tomasi has specific things to say at different points that are worth listening to. He is a man who lives outside. He keeps an eye on the police. He sees abuses that happen. He's experienced abuses, and that has to be taken into consideration. It's also interesting to see how there's a differential treatment. But in any case, what Michael does here, Michael Tomasi does at Oral Communications, is his own affair. But when he speaks on items on the agenda, the idea that he can be allowed to go on uninterrupted when he's not talking on the item is, of course, I think, a political strategy that the mayor uses, as I said, in order to justify a repressive crackdown. It's like what the police do when they stop enforcing all kinds of laws in an area, make it appear to be a free fire zone, and then say crime is going wild, so, for example, we can't lift the sleeping ban here, which is what they did in 2000, May and June, when the city council was considering safe sleeping zones. The same kind of approach is being used here at city council, where it's making it look like it's a chaotic situation. Everyone's going to have to wait forever through meaningless ramblings. But that's because the mayor chooses, not on this particular occasion, because, as I said, this is oral communications and not comment on a particular agenda item, but he chooses generally to allow this to happen. He's allowing it to happen so that he can take repressive action. And I'm now going to play you the repressive action he took. This is the city council meeting 2 weeks later, and this is action taken on an item called item, well, it's item number 18, and it has to do with, it's under the deceptive title of changes to the council members' handbook. And I wrote a lengthy letter to the city council about this item, which didn't make it to the city council. I sent it to the city council. I sent it to the city clerk. Neither of them said they got it. I sent it again. She still didn't get it. I called her today. I'm still working with her on it. I'm not saying that she's acting in any disingenuous way. I don't think Leslie is. But it's peculiar that my communications don't get through to the city council unless I hand-deliver them and get them hand-stamped, which is what I've done in the past. I kind of had hoped I could find an easier way to do it. So I'm going to play for you some of the city council session of 2 days ago. And I'm actually toying with the idea of reading you this letter that I wrote to the city council. It's posted on Indie Media for those who are interested in checking out Indie Media. It's if you go to the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, you can check on Rotkin's Council to Cut Back Public Comment. And there's a discussion there. It seemed actually to prompt some favorable comment, interestingly enough. And what I may do actually is call it up on the screen here and read a little bit. This is and Rotkin will describe his own city, what he's proposing to the city council. In fact, I think what I'll do is I'll let Rotkin speak for himself. This is Rotkin proposing a severe restriction on all public comment on about half the agenda items that come up at city council every session.
I'm moving the recommendation before us.
Second. Thank you, Cynthia. Second by Emily. Any further comments on this one? Thank you.
This is actually the prior item.
Appreciate it.
It's coming up.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Carries unanimously. Item number 18 is some housekeeping business that I've brought to the council concerning the council member handbook, which are our rules of procedure.
Now, the first thing to note, I'm going to interrupt him immediately, is it's not housekeeping business at all. It is a meaningful and substantive reduction in the right of the public to speak at city council. And what he's going to propose, and I will summarize it, is he's going to propose that if you want to pull an item from the consent agenda, if you pull more than one item, then you will only get a total of 5 minutes maximum to speak on all the items combined. So if you pull two or three items, you only get 3 minutes for the first item and 1 minute for each successive item, let's say. Or you can choose to do it however you want, but you will have to make that choice, and you will probably have to do it all as a bundle of speech, all in one presentation rather than item by item, which is what he made me do 2 weeks ago as a sort of a ruling from the chair without any kind of backing in the city rules, other than he has a right to do what he wants. So he's making this a regular procedure. He's saying that you can't pull more than one item from the consent agenda without locking yourself into a much more limited time frame. The second thing that Rotkin proposes is on the administrative agenda, which is the agenda that follows the city council's consent agenda in the afternoon session, has a lot of different items on it. About, I'd say, a half to two-thirds of the items on the city council agenda are either consent or administrative items. And they have to do with how money is spent by the city, how projects are spent, who's various reports from different committees. If you want to comment on an administrative item, you can only speak for 3 minutes on the first item, and every successive item you can only speak for 1 minute on. This is a cutback of the right to speak for 3 minutes on any item that comes up if you want to speak on it. This is a severe restriction, and it is directed, I think, almost entirely at me because of the fact that I have chosen at different points, on one occasion in protest, because we did not allow me to speak on consent agenda items at the beginning of the session when most people speak, but they put the items 6 hours ahead in a deliberate attempt to discourage people from speaking. They were called to task on this procedure under the Brown Act. They are being sued in federal court for a false arrest from 3 years ago, and they're nervous about deciding at any particular moment in the city council to simply single out a single person and say, okay, we're going to give you much less time to talk and we're moving your item to the end of the agenda because it obviously is selective and designed not to hear a particular person. So instead, they're going to limit everybody. They're going to make it so that nobody gets to talk. They're going to limit democracy and public input thoroughly. That's what's going on.
Just to clarify that the meeting started at 3 o'clock or close to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It had said 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the past, and we should just correct it to bring the handbook in line with the facts. Secondly, we have had some problems, I believe, in my opinion, in the afternoon sessions with large numbers of items being pulled off for comments, some of which are on point, some of which may not be on point. And in the past, it's been very difficult for the chair of the meeting, whoever's been mayor, it's not a personality issue, to try and tell members of the public, you're speaking on the topic, you're not speaking on the topic. And rather than resolve the issue in that way, which basically means making judgment calls about whether people are speaking appropriately to items or not, which we still can do if they're completely off the topic. But this is trying to sort of set up a way that we would not spend as much time in the afternoon.
What he means to say is, or what he's really saying, in my view, is that Rotkin doesn't call people who he doesn't like because they're off topic. He's very, very vigilant in just trying to shut them down if they're even slightly potentially off topic, or if he finds it offensive what they're doing. Actually, other council members like Fitzmaurice are harsher on this in this particular way. So Rotkin doesn't have any problem with calling people off topic. However, when it becomes clear that he's singling out individuals like myself on this issue when I'm not off topic, then when I threaten a Brown Act lawsuit, even though we've never actually carried through a Brown Act lawsuit, but there is a lawsuit that talked about a false arrest in the Heil Krohn case. For regular listeners may remember, this is where I was arrested for simply holding up my arm in a silent gesture. The idea that, that he's protecting the city and the city council from litigation. He's protecting the city council from people talking endlessly off topic isn't the case. What he's protecting is his right to steer and suppress public discussion here and not to be held accountable legally when he does this. So what he's going to do is he's going to punish the entire community because he has in the past acted improperly in shutting down public comment. He or former Mayor Kennedy or acting Mayor Cynthia Matthews. That is what's going on here. And he's going to make it appear fairer by discriminating against everybody. Now, I proposed instead that what Rotkin do, I actually had a number of proposals. The first proposal was that they limit city council discussion because that's what takes up the lion's share of the time. The idea that I and even Michael Tomasi take up endless amounts of time is ridiculous. What takes up time is the fact that I raise issues that the city council gets embarrassed about, and then they have to spend time talking about those issues. I raise issues about whether the staff has actually, thoroughly investigated a matter, whether the staff's report is relevant and on topic, whether whether it's necessary to rush ahead with certain things, what the deadlines are. I ask a series of questions which often are unanswered, but just as much of the time they are answered, and that is what takes up the time, because the city council wants to rush ahead with its prefabricated agenda. That's sort of the way they go, the way they do it. They like to give the appearance of a democratic process without the substance. And so when you kind of tear away the veil, they have to do some more fast talking in order to persuade the community that indeed everything is okay. Go back to the ball game. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of everything here. Pay no attention to the critics, off in the corner. They're not to be listened to. That's what takes the time. Their justifications for what they do is what takes the time. Not the fact that certain members of the public spend a lonely 3 minutes per item offering some criticism, some commentary, and often some elucidation. I think that a lot of what I have to say, Rotkin claims that I'm simply trying to talk about issues like extraneous issues like the sleeping ban and the homeless. I do bring them in, it's true, at different points. But I also talk about the substantive issues at hand. And that substantive discussion is, I think, equally of concern to Rotkin in making sure that I don't get the time to engage in this kind of discussion. And that's what's happening at City Council. I or others like me will not have that opportunity anymore. You'll have to cram it all into a five-minute discussion of however many items you've pulled off the agenda. And if you want to talk about items that are later on in the agenda, you'll only be able to talk about the first one for any reasonable amount of time, 3 minutes. I don't know how reasonable that is, but that's the usual amount of time. And every other item, you get 1 minute, which, of course, is about enough time to say hi and goodbye and thank you very much.
Individuals about items, a large number of items being pulled off the consent. We are not trying to focus on any particular individuals, and we are certainly not trying to make it impossible for people to talk about items that are of importance to them in the council agenda. So what I've proposed is that in terms of the consent agenda, we've had situations where we've had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 items pulled off consent agenda by one individual in the public. And as a result, we spent, it's now a month ago, about an hour and a half with just, if you think about this, if a person can speak for 3 minutes on each item that they pulled off, that's 3 minutes times 10 items would be.
And Rotkin is lying. I've never pulled off more than 5 items, possibly 6 on the consent agenda. So the idea that 10 items were pulled off, he's exaggerating in order to alarm the council, or I should say not even alarm it. They're kind of pretty much asleep at the wheel. They're too alarmed. They're just annoyed with anything that interferes with the usual progress of their juggernaut. But he's making false statements. And the amount of time, as I said, that was taken up in the previous month that he talks about happened because the council decided to spend a lot of time discussing concerns that I raised.
Other people join them in that process of commenting on every one of those items, you can end up with an hour and a half, hour and 20 minutes, which is actually an hour and 20 minutes that we spent listening to 3 individuals comment on items. And
it wasn't an hour and 20 minutes listening to 3 individuals. It was probably about 30 minutes listening to 3 individuals, and the rest of the time the council was speaking. And one of those individuals, Michael Tomasi, often didn't speak on topic. He could have been ruled off topic and told he had to stay on topic. And the other items were only, I think Ed Davidson talked on 2 or 3 items, and I talked at most on 4 or 5 items at most. And we're talking about items on the, if we're talking about the consent agenda. So the idea that the council's time is being taken up is true, but the council's time is being taken up by the council trying to cover for objections raised about its smoothly running machine, which apparently ran into some problems with the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel when the community decided, machine, time to slow down.
Judgment here, but I would say speaking only in with marginal connection to the actual issues they had pulled off the agenda at best. So what I'm proposing.
So there it is, the claim that we're talking only, that we're irrelevant. If it's only marginal connection to the items, then you can say the item is, you got to talk to the item in question. But Rotkin doesn't want to do that for several reasons. First of all, in the case of myself and the few other speakers who often speak there, we are talking on the items in question. We do raise concerns the council may not want to hear because they have the items ready to be rushed on through. In the case of Michael Tomasi, Rotkin prefers to have a speaker who's speaking, who makes the other speakers, who seems a bit clownish, off-topic, anachronistic, out of time, a little grotesque in ways, because he's a colorful fellow and he's a little bit way out of it. I mean, he's in his own world in many ways, although, as I said, he often has some significant things to say.
I had some thoughts about this from other council members, but I'll put this forward as my own proposal at this point. that because usually in the afternoon we're dealing with routine administrative business items, not public hearings on issues of great import to the city, which we typically try and do in the evening, that unless someone is principally involved with an item under discussion, in other words, if we're proposing some administrative change that will affect somebody's business or their house or something directly that, you know, has impact on them, they may be able to ask for a longer time and get it. But everything else being equal, any member who pulls something off the consent agenda item, if they want to pull more than one consent agenda item, if they pull one, they get 3 minutes, as they do currently. But if they pull off more than one consent agenda item, they will get 5 minutes to speak to all the items that they pull off the consent agenda. And so it's up to them if they'd rather, you know, spend 3 minutes talking on one item and spread the 2 minutes on everything else, or really only, you know, talk very briefly on every one of the items they pull off or something else. So that's the consent agenda piece of this proposal that's in front of us. The other part of it has to do with administrative items that are not on consent, but items that happen later in the afternoon. If a member of the public wants to speak to multiple administrative business items, they may speak for 3 minutes on one item of their choosing, but all the other items they want to comment on, they'll get a minute and a half and not 3 minutes on every item all afternoon. Because, again, we had a situation now, and this was about 2 months ago, when we spent another hour and 20 minutes in the afternoon hearing from three individuals who felt like they wanted to get up and comment on every single thing in the afternoon, not necessarily, again, speaking in some clear way about the item that was actually under consideration.
Again, a false statement about the individuals who spoke on that occasion, but also a direct attack on the right of individuals to address the city council on those items. Rotkin and Kennedy have made it a practice on a number of occasions of holding no evening sessions. And the implication is that unless you fit into their rushed, crammed program in the afternoon, you're somehow destroying the city council's schedule and agenda, when the city council should be providing a reasonable amount of time for the community to speak. This is preposterous. That's why it's very deceptive for Rotkin to talk about things like important items come on in the evening, and this stuff in the afternoon isn't really that important, so we can afford to cut back public comment. He doesn't mention that for the last two sessions, he's eliminated evening sessions. So he wants to both have his cake and eat it, too. He wants us to have nothing. He wants us to, in essence, jump on his train and wave as we move along, or else, you know, get run over as he rolls by.
I'm sorry, for 1 minute. So they get 3 minutes on the first, the most important item they want to talk about, and they can let us know which item that they want to speak to. But once they've spoken to an item, for identify the item they want for 3 minutes, all the other items they will get 1 minute for comments on that. We would change would be done through a motion to amend our council handbook to clarify that these are our rules of procedure. So I'm proposing this to the council for its discussion. Before we get into it, we should ask the public if they have comments about these proposals. Please come up to the microphone. And you have 3 minutes to talk about this issue.
I regret that some people abuse their right of free speech, but I don't think it should be curtailed at the detriment of others.
Thanks for your comments. Other comments? Mr. Tomasi?
Mayor Rotkin, City Council. My name is Mike Tomasi, King of the Trolls of A Battery, 6th Battalion, 14th Artillery, a walking, talking miracle from Vietnam, the greatest forward observer in the history of all armies, and a real live hero. It took me 33 years to figure out what happened to me, and 36 to know I'm home. I'm actually getting tired of all these rules you people have. But, you know, I know you got to have them. So I'll take 3 minutes, and then when it's time to take 25, I'll do my best to do so. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Other members of the public want to speak on this item?
So, for example, in this case, I don't think Tomasi is trying to be humorous. I just don't think he knows quite what's going on, and it's kind of nonsensical. It's hard to deal with commentary at the city council, Mike, that sounds nonsensical. I guess I'm not entirely sure what I would do except to say it has to be on topic. Maybe the speaker can be asked what he's talking about, and that some sort of a dialogue can happen, although that, too, can be repressive. So I'm not saying the speaker's job, the chair's job, Mayor Rotkin's job in this situation is always an easy one. But Rotkin's solution is to cut back public comment. Rotkin's solution is to find ways to increase the power of the city council to decrease the power of the public. And this is just exactly in the wrong direction. And, of course, ultimately it results in, I think, well, I kind of hope it results in more logjam because I think it's the wrong way to go. And certainly in the case of the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel project, it has.
Ed.
Well, I'm generally in favor of this idea. I recommended to the mayor a version of this, and I believe we tried it out at our previous meeting. It seemed to work well. It seems to focus on the purpose of public comment on items and resolve a problem where some few individuals were abusing that process. One concern I have is that there might be extraordinary circumstances where individuals would want to speak on two or three items in an afternoon session. And I just want to clarify that other procedures, which I didn't find in the handbook, so I want to confirm that these.
So Councilmember Porter has exposed himself as being a not just a supporter of this, but a person who actually proposed part of this plan. And they experimented on it with me the week before. And the idea here, you know, seems to be that it's, you know, the idea that a member of the public will want to comment on more than one or two items is completely ridiculous, but that council members want to do so at great length is a natural thing and something we should accept. It's a very privileged notion of the public process here. It affords some kind of, well, I mean, the city council members have obviously a special status. They have special power. But the idea that they have such they're such a different category of individual than the ordinary member of the public, so much so that a minor 3-minute period is now going to be compressed to 1 minute or reduced to nothing at all in the case of some consent agenda items, to me shows an incredible arrogance on the part of the city council. They're also being deceptive. They don't use my name because they know that that would make it clear that they're engaging in punitive action against one member of the public. But I'm the motivation for this. It seems pretty clear. My commentary at City Council's motivation. They obviously can't rule it out of order because it isn't out of order. I'm not speaking extraneously on issues. I'm talking about issues that come up that I have a right to speak on. And they, if this were called substantively to account in a court, show me where Mr. Norris spoke out of topic on issues A, B, C, D, and E, they would be at a loss to do it, because I didn't. And what I had to say, I think, was relevant to the public discussion and debate. They didn't want to hear it. That's the motivation for cutting back this whole thing. What they're going to do instead, and some council members, you hear this discussion, and we're going to kind of cut it short, because not much of the following discussion is particularly enlightening or reassuring. But they're saying that, well, you know, if we want other people to be able to speak at a longer period of time, then council members can always recognize them. So council members will be able to recognize their favorites and people that they want to speak and essentially ignore other people. I mean, it's incredibly violative of the spirit of the Brown Act, which lets the public speak without fear or favor. And that, of course, is what the city council has now ruled is illegal in their council member handbook changes. I'll play a little bit more of this, but then I'm going to move on to Mike Seymour. I said we were going to be discussing that at 7 o'clock, actually hearing an interview from him. And for anyone who's been listening, probably there's only been one or two people who were informed of this. There was a special KZSC student reporter who worked with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for a couple of weeks. He's done some research, and he also did a little kind of overview of some of the concerns of what civil rights activist Bob Patton and myself were doing, and he's designed a segment for KZSC. And I'm going to play that at some point, too. It may not happen until Sunday, and for anyone who was waiting for that, I apologize. But let's hear a little bit more of the city council meeting of March 22nd, where Mayor Mike Rotkin and the city council pass a proposal that essentially cuts your public comment time by 2/3, must be by more than that, actually, but significantly cuts back public comment time on a majority of the items that City Council will be considering in the future.
Each council member can still recognize individuals who wish to speak longer than these limits would prescribe, and also that at any time a council member could move to have an extension of public input time. And with those understandings, I will move this recommendation.
Second. I'll second it for purpose of discussion. Tim first, and Cynthia.
I think this is. I understand the earnestness of the decision that somehow we have to have a clarity about how we're making decisions concerning public comment. I think the consent agenda aspect of it.
Councilmember Fitzmaurice.
I guess it's somewhat understandable to me, and maybe I could be persuaded, maybe. The second is completely ununderstandable to me. I don't see any reason why every business item that we're going to be discussing, anything that's pulled from consent, anything that's on the administrative business, every member of the public ought to be able to come in and speak their piece on it without restriction. I cannot imagine somehow that the first thing they speak on, they get 3 minutes, but then if they speak on something subsequent to that, they get 1 minute. What did they get to use their 1 minute on the first one?
Yes.
And then do the three? I mean, I think this could become horrendous in terms of trying to control what is essentially the public's right. I sort of agree with the gentleman. People abuse the right to free speech, but we shouldn't curtail this to the detriment of others. I think that's a pretty adequate way of describing it. So as it's currently suggested, I'm going to vote against this item. I think with the understanding, and it's my understanding, I just double-checked with the city attorney, and it's my understanding that the mayor, by announcement, has the right to limit the time on any item at any time, that the mayor can do that, and that we as a council have the right to overrule that decision of the chair on that matter. That's right here on the first page of our agenda. The mayor, with the consent of the council, may set time limits prior to consideration of any specific item. So as long as the mayor has the right to do that, then I assume that the mayor is going to be able to use that right. Now, I suppose what will happen in the future was that somewhat reflective of what somebody said, I think maybe Mr. Porter said, mayor might be able to suspend this policy in favor of people that come to speak on some item or other. That would certainly be, as far as I'm concerned, within the right of the mayor to do that. Or, as Mr. Porter suggested, any council member might be able to call upon a person to speak at greater length. I think we ought to be really careful and probably try to err on the side of consistency and say that every person has the right, especially on an administrative business item or in any item pulled from consent, to speak their 3 minutes unless we've decided to limit comment on that particular item. And so I will vote against this.
Can I just ask you, sir, any item pulled from consent would be exactly the current situation. Someone could pull every item off consent and then have 3 minutes to speak on each one of them. Is that what you're saying would be acceptable? Just so I understand your point here. That's what's happening now.
Right. I think that's an inevitably the situation we find ourselves in. Okay.
Brian's next.
Okay. Recent experience has shown, I think, that we need to set different ground rules, and the handbook still does say, unless further time is granted by the presiding officer, the time limit shall be as stated. It does maintain the right of the presiding officer, or, as others have said, individual council members.
This is the vice mayor speaking. She's the woman who, in the middle of a public hearing, actually, on an administrative item. I was sure it was a public hearing or an administrative item, but it wasn't a consent agenda item. I had spoken for 3 minutes. Michael Tomasi got up, and he was told he could only speak for 90 seconds. And this was after, I think we talked on three or four items, but you know what, for a total of 10 or 15 minutes total, all our time at most, probably less, probably 5 to 10 minutes total time. the how jealously these council members guard their right to waste the public time, but to deny the public the right to any kind of response or communication. It's really it's kind of awe-inspiring. It's kind of the arrogance is breathtaking. Fitzmaurice, Becky Johnson, who produces this show and actually sat through this entire discussion, she was watching it on television, had a more favorable view of Fitzmaurice than I did. She described him as being a defender of freedom and so forth. And he is saying he wants to keep the rules as they are. And indeed, he was the only vote against this Rotkin proposal, which passed 6-1, cutting back public comment time enormously. But you'll hear him saying later on, actually you won't because I'm not going to play the whole thing, I don't think, at this point. Maybe if there's time later in the show, I will. But he goes on saying that he doesn't mind having items cut, people who want to talk about on the consent agenda, items cut back, but he's a little bit more wary about the administrative agenda. So he double tracks. He tries an amendment to sort of cut the baby in half, and that doesn't work. But he opposes the whole thing, which is a principled position. But he also makes statements that are false. He claims that I abuse the public comment time. He's claimed that specifically. He doesn't have the objectivity and the impartiality or the breadth of a vision, if you will, to say, here's a guy who disagrees with me. Instead, his voice drips with contempt and hostility, and he dismisses me with a kind of a hatred and hostility often in the comments that I make. Although it's interesting, he of all the council members is the member who will occasionally pick up what I say and run with it, because I do try to raise relevant considerations, whether it's in the issue of disabled folks and whether we should give the landlords more opportunity to block disabled access, which was a concern that the council under Rotkin rammed through some weeks ago, and I raised that issue by bringing the testimony of disabled people to council. He was an individual who voted against that, and he's after I raised the issue. Otherwise, it was going to be pressed forward, I believe. I don't know if it was a consent agenda. It was probably an administrative item. But it was going to be pressed forward, and it was eventually pressed forward as a no-brainer, another go with Rotkin. So the council, I think, disgraced itself by what it did here fundamentally. It allowed a manipulative mayor to cut short public comment time for everyone, as he gunned for one activist he didn't want to be able to speak at city council. I actually arranged meetings with Rotkin at the beginning of the year. I didn't get to the second meeting. We haven't yet gotten to the second meeting, I should say, about public process, with the idea of finding some way of kind of coming to an understanding that would be less. I doubt that Rotkin and I are going to be less confrontational, since I think he needs to be confronted. But in terms of coming to an understanding about public process, so we can kind of get past these questions of process and simply get into the more substantial issues, that meeting hasn't happened yet. It looks like it might not happen, because now he's hiding behind the idea of lawsuits, and he has to do all this, he says at one point later in the meeting, because of lawsuits. You know, we've been threatened with a lawsuit. You know, and of course, the only person I know who threatened him with a lawsuit around these issues is me. And we've actually taken him to court. And I didn't do it because I wanted to terrorize the council. I did it because I was hauled off in handcuffs for silently raising my arm from the side of the room in a gesture that indicated, I think you're acting like a bunch of fascists. And they were so thin-skinned that they had me arrested and taken to jail and held in jail for 5 or 6 hours. And that's just not permissible conduct by a city council. That case, by the way, is going back to case management in federal court in mid-April. That doesn't mean it's going to be on trial then, but it's going to be looked at again, and it is back in court. And unless there is a settlement, we will be going to trial. That's the current situation on that case. How about a brief musical break here, since this has been going on, a lot of talking and not much singing. course, that's going to require a little selection here, and I'll be right with you on that one. I want to remind you that you are tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM here in Santa Cruz. And if you want to call in, the call-in number is 427-3772, or you can go to www.pagesincolor.
Chavez or Rosa Parks that day. Some say Dr. King or Gandhi that set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see that if you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand, 'cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Hey, you law-abiding citizens, come listen to this song. Laws are made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote while the children wrote the mine, yeah.
The more you study history, the less you can deny it.
Say a rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it.
Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand, 'cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Well, the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. But when the system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace.
We must be ever vigilant for justice to prevail.
So get courage from your convictions, let them haul you up to jail.
Have you been to jail for justice? Won't shake your hand, 'cause singing and lying down ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine. Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Peter, Paul, and Mary from In These Times. Have you been to jail for justice? And a lot of us have, and we're still looking. Again, Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, 427-3772 if you'd like to call in. And before I leave the City Council's discuss at your own peril rules, it's item 18 cutbacks, which it did 2 days ago at its Tuesday City Council meeting. I'm going to read a little bit of my letter to them, which I think kind of covers much of what I said here, but it includes a few other things. The proposed change in the rules involves a wholesale and arbitrary attack on the right of public comment on items on the consent agenda, the administrative agenda, which contain by far the majority of the City Council's business items. And the resolution is deceptively packaged under the name of Council Member Handbook. Resolution revising Council Member Handbook. It actually concerns an unprecedented reduction of public comment time directed against the public with no restrictions at all on City Council members. This drastic reduction of the amount of public comment time on the majority of City Council agenda items should be billed as a modest proposal to cut the right of the public to speak on two-thirds of the agenda items before City Council. Muzzling consent agenda discussion. You propose to penalize any member of the public who wishes to exercise her right to talk on more than one item of the consent agenda by requiring the speaker to compress all their remarks on all items into 5 minutes of continuous discussion. Such a restriction does not allow members of the public to hear and benefit from hearing the testimony of others on the same item, since they must prepare their remarks in advance and give them all at the same time. It makes it hard for both the listening public and City Council members to follow remarks made about such items, since they must hurriedly be made and crammed together in such a limited time. Finally, the absurdity of such a restriction is clear when you consider how it would be regarded if applied to a council member. It would not be possible to reasonably discuss the items at all. The consent agenda has often served as a means of rushing through items that have merited further discussion, such as the funding for the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel consultants. You and former mayors, to discourage public comment from disfavored members of the public, have already adopted muzzling tactics that have involved moving the consent agenda ahead many hours, moving it ahead to a time uncertain, suddenly bringing an item back when a person who wants to speak on a consent agenda item is out of the room, and selectively cutting back public comment time on a consent agenda when a person you don't want to hear from is at the microphone. These tactics, as well as the current proposed rule change, further restrict public comment in a capricious, arbitrary, and discriminatory fashion. The rule changes that you propose here violate several sections of the Ralph M. Brown Act, which guarantees the community fair public comment time on each agenda item, not to be removed at the whim or prejudice of the chair, or indeed of the entire city council. Rather, I would urge you to consider adding a provision that the consent agenda discussion, A, shall not be delayed from its announced place on the agenda except for those special items for which a significant percentage of the public and council chambers is waiting, B, shall provide a minimum of 3 minutes discussion per item per person except under the most unusual circumstances, C, shall also be limited among city council members to a total of 5 minutes per item among city council members, unless the time is extended by a majority vote of the council for another 5 minutes, hence council members will be limited to 5 minutes per item. And shall also include an understanding that repetitive or off-topic remarks will be discouraged. The chair shall remind the speaker that he has the right to rule such remarks out of order. To muzzle the public while providing unrestricted and often extremely long-winded response and discussion time by council members is an outrageous abuse of the democratic process. And this letter actually goes on, and if you want to read it, you can go to indymedia.org. But here's some commentary from a person who's out there on the streets and I think deserves a little attention as well.
It's the 21st of March, 2005. I'm checking out the ocean here about 11:20 with Mike Seymour. And what's the location here, Mike? What's the street we're on? This is sort of a nice ocean view. There's a sign warning cliff edges are dangerous. Please keep off native plant restoration progress, project in progress. And, of course, there's a tow-away, no parking, 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., harmless be gone sign. And we're here with your hefty Ventura vehicle. Where are we anyway?
We're at the river mouth, San Lorenzo River mouth, on East Cliff Drive at the Monterey Bay.
And this is the scene of your first citation in Santa Cruz?
That's right.
That happened about a year and 3 or 4 months ago?
Yeah, a little over a year ago.
Yes, you've talked about that before on the air. State Park Ranger came up and got on your case.
Yeah, well, if you want to walk about 10 steps, I'll show you the marks from the damage done to my vehicle are still on the street more than a year later.
Okay. So you're pointing to the ground, and there's a sort of a black tread mark on the street right in front of the parking area. And what happened here, Mike?
This would be where they started towing my vehicle while it was still in park.
And the reason they were towing it was?
There was no reason. All charges were dismissed. The pretext was a failure to appear on some 10, 12-year-old charge that I'm not completely aware of.
Was it a sleeping ticket, or you don't even know?
I really don't know what the old charge was because they dismissed the charge and I never got to address it.
So you also said that you not only ran afoul of the park ranger or vice versa, or the state ranger, but you also ran afoul of some locals who took umbrage to your pulling weeds?
Yeah, the local speed freak bicycle skateboard competitors have decided that they can't do without the weeds in which to hide their beer while they drink on the beach.
And you actually were pointing out to me some area where you were pulling the weeds?
Well, some of the non-native plants did get pulled in order to replace them with native plants, and it seems like the Speed Freak bunch can't think far enough ahead they can't do without their place to hide their beer for a few weeks.
Now, I notice a man in an adjoining vehicle looks also very much like a camper. You know this fellow?
Not really.
Do you have any kind of friendly relations with other people in vehicles? I mean, is there any commonality of interest? I mean, do other people obviously have to sleep, or other people live in their vehicles in Santa Cruz. Have you had many conversations with them?
I have lots of conversations. I don't know anybody willing to speak up about it because they're afraid to speak up.
You, on the other hand, in the last week, went to the police department because a week before you had surgery for a cancer problem?
Skin cancer on my ear.
And when you returned the day after, well, actually, it was some days after that, you were, your van was banged on?
The same day of my surgery, I was not allowed to sleep that night because they objected to me being in my vehicle overnight for some reason.
This was in the same location we're at now, at another location?
This was at another location. You can't sleep on the beach.
Right, you can't sleep in a vehicle park. Actually, you can't even park here. There's a no parking 10 to 5 a.m. sign, as I mentioned before, tow away. So the day of your surgery was what day?
Wednesday the 16th.
And that same day, the police officers came or you just, and told you couldn't sleep there?
Well, the local speed freaks called the police in order that I not sleep in their neighborhood because they don't like people seeing what they do. So they called the police and had the police come to remove me. I did not respond to the knock on the door. I did not leave. And they did not issue a ticket because I did not respond to their knock on my door.
But first of all, you don't really know who was knocking on your door. It could have been the freaks. It could have been, did they say police, open up? Or?
I could see out. They could not see in.
You saw people in uniform?
It was police officers, yes, and I could hear the radios, and I could see all the bright lights on my vehicle.
How many police would you estimate?
Don't really know. I only saw one.
And why do you say that this particular group of, as you describe them, speed freaks or locals who are hostile to you called, were they talking about it or do you just sort of assume from past behavior?
All they have to do is check the record and see where the call came from.
Have you checked that record?
I have not checked the record, don't need to. They have threatened me in every way, form, and fashion. They have threatened me in front of the police, and the police have told me to leave.
Right, but based on that prior incident, in this particular incident, it could have been somebody else, but it probably wasn't in your view?
There's no doubt about who it is.
I mean, could it have been the police simply doing an ordinary check on this particular night because they're going after people in their vehicles?
No.
And why not?
They don't do that. They don't look for trouble. They respond to telephone calls. The mayor told me that they get about 30 tickets for a sleeping ban per month. And as a matter of fact, in the same breath, he told me that the city needed the money.
The city only gets $20 per ticket for a sleeping ban ticket. That makes a total of $600 per month, and probably the cost per ticket is many times that, would be my guess.
The average price that people end up paying is $260.
But not to the city. The city gets $20 of that.
That's their problem.
I guess. But Mayor Rutkin is making a strange argument if he's talking on behalf of the city. Interestingly enough, the bail for getting rid of a camping or sleeping ticket without a trial, without appearing in court, is now $90. Although the fine is only $20, at least only 20 of it goes to the city. That's interestingly enough. But getting back to the situation, you had had your operation and you noticed the police harassing you. What was your response after you did a low profile number?
8 o'clock on the 17th, Thursday morning, I went and spoke to Officer Black at the police department and asked him if it was within his power to give me a break for a few nights to recover from my surgery. I asked him not to enforce for the speed freaks in the White House. His response was, whoever calls...
The White House, you don't mean the presidency, you mean the house from which you believe the complaints are coming locally, right?
Yes. His response was, whoever calls to complain about someone sleeping in a vehicle has to be responded to. Whoever calls. He doesn't care if it's the local drug dealer or if it's a prominent citizen. That person has a house. I don't. I'm wrong.
Well, is he suggesting, though, that, for example, let's suppose another homeless man offended by your color scheme on the vehicle or concerned that you snore too loud called in and complained, he would also probably respond to that complaint from a homeless person?
Probably. He would have to respond.
So what was your reaction to that, and what did you tell him?
I told him it was cut the crap time. And surely you can protect me from a gang of speed freaks. And he said to me again, no, we have to respond to a 911 call. And you're breaking the law by sleeping between the curbs.
Now, you actually had an encounter with one of the individuals whom you call, I don't know, you call him, I assume you're associating with the same individual with the so-called speed freak group. About 2 weeks before?
Oh, yeah. He came and attacked me here on the beach, told the police that I had molested some 16-year-old girl, which he hasn't come up with yet. I've not seen an irate mother. I've just got this accusation. These people know what to tell the police to make them respond.
Now, when you say he attacked you, you mean he shouted at you, verbally attacked you, struck you, menaced you? Be more specific.
It ran up on my car with his pit bull, banging on my car, screaming at the top of his lungs, spitting at me, and for about 10 minutes before I finally called the police to get him out. When the police responded, this is the story he gave them. I had molested some 16-year-old girl, and he didn't like it, and he was going to kill me. The police continued to tell me, that's a big boy. He's liable to kill you because, from what he said, take a look at you. I wouldn't want to walk my family in front of you.
Now, just, you describe your appearance, Mike. How much do you weigh?
I weigh less than 100 pounds.
How old are you?
56, going on 75.
And you have a sort of a weathered look about your face. You have your face has great character. You have many wisdom wrinkles, and you also have sideburns and a mustache.
I earned every damn wrinkle.
Did the police make this comment to you about, you better watch out, he might kill you? Or I'd like you to be more as specific as you can. What comment did the police make in front of him? Was he present when this was made, the individual who was threatening him?
Yes, this individual, threatening individual, was present, and what the police actually said was, this 200-pound boy is liable to clean your clock, and I can almost guarantee I won't be here in time to help you. If I were you, I would leave this beach, and more than that, I would leave Midtown completely.
Did he... This is one police officer, or were there more than one present?
There was four police officers. This is what one of them said to me in this man's presence.
Did you recognize any of the police officers?
No. I was so disgusted, I didn't even care.
Now, what time of day was it and what day?
February 23rd? I believe it was February 23rd. It was as a matter of fact, it was the same day I found out I had skin cancer.
And about what time of day?
I have it written down somewhere. I don't know offhand.
Daytime?
Yeah.
And did he say, and in turn turn to the other individual who had called the police on you and whom you complained about threatening your life or threatening your security, your safety, did he say anything to that individual?
I didn't hear it. If he did, I don't know what he said to that guy.
But he didn't say anything in front of you to that individual?
No.
And you have reason to believe that person is a property owner or a renter nearby?
He's a renter. He lives in a house on the corner of Hall and Broman, right behind the Pacific Edge. And he's the He's in charge of a quite a large gang in the whole house. Nothing occurs without his say-so.
You want to name this person?
Yeah, Mingo Davies.
Okay, we'll ask. We'll ask Mr. Davies to make a statement on the air as well.
Yeah, why don't you? He'll give you an interest. He should have something real interesting to say. Let's hear it.
If we can contact him.
Oh, he'll be happy to talk to you, I think.
Well, I have to know his phone number or somehow find a way to.
I got no way. I'll show you where he lives. How about it?
Possibly may do that. But Mr. Davies, if you're listening to this broadcast, or if anybody knows Mr. Davies and he wishes to respond to this rather serious accusation by Mike here, certainly he's welcome to do so. And the phone number to call, of course, is Free Radio. You can call. Well, you can call me. I'm Robert Norris, 423-4833, and leave a message on the phone, and we'll arrange airtime for you to respond to this. So, after this threat, and after your operation several weeks later, and after the police came the next day, or actually the day of your operation,
yeah.
and you know, again, sought to rouse you, and after you went down to the police station, talked to Officer Black, asked for his help, and he, in essence, said, sorry, we're going to enforce the law here. What did you do then?
Nothing.
And what did the police do?
Lots. They kept responding every night after that.
And so for how many nights thereafter did they try to wake you?
Two, until I got tired of it and went somewhere else to spend one night just so I could get some sleep.
We're talking with Mike Seymour. Mike, you've also had some thoughts about, you've just expressed them in Huff meetings about your concern about how this law not only impacts homeless people who are just trying to catch a wink of sleep, it also affects the public safety because people who are tired driving or people who are, should we say, somewhat intoxicated coming home from bars may be deterred from pulling over to sleep in the city limits of Santa Cruz because of this law.
That's right.
You also have expressed a concern about the Citizens Police Review Board, or I should say the lack of a Citizens Police Review Board, which, of course, was killed with Mayor Mike Rotkin in the lead when it was sliced away a couple years ago. And did you speak to Mayor Rotkin about this in your hour-long conversation with him a week and a half ago?
Yes, every time I did, he tried to change the subject.
Tell us a little bit more about the conversation with Mayor Rotkin. No?
No.
You're going to leave that one to percolate a bit?
I'm going to let that one go.
Well, we'll have to wait for the final outcome of that. Anything else you want to say, Mike?
Nope.
Thank you. Mike Seymour here at the original spot where he was ticketed, I guess arrested, or were you just
arrested?
And your vehicle was towed. How long were you held in jail?
They didn't actually lock the door. The jailer laughed and said, I'm not taking responsibility for this. You're going right home. I said, how can I do that? They took my home somewhere. Where is it? And they didn't, nobody knew which tow company had taken it. Nobody even could tell me or would where my car was.
And that is Mike Seymour talking a couple of days ago to me as we stood on the coast at this spot where he had confrontations with a number of people who threatened his life in the presence of the police, apparently, and the police, by his account, took no action that he was aware of. Of course, he's still alive, so maybe the threats were not as serious, or maybe the police did take some action behind the scenes. Who knows? We're going to be continuing this interview on Sunday, but I did get a phone call during the interview, actually several phone calls from callers who want to call in. I know one of them, Andrea, is waiting to call in to talk about her concerns about public comment at City Council and how she was treated by Mayor Rotkin and a letter that she's written to Mayor Rotkin about that subject, and perhaps she'll be calling in shortly. And after that, I'm hoping to hear from Area 420 medical marijuana activist, actually anti-drug war activist, Jim Losey over the hill in San Jose, who usually has a whole bunch of new information. There's somebody calling in. My goodness. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Andrea calling back.
Hey, Andrea.
Yeah, I wrote this short letter, and I want to read it to you. Actually, I mean, I wrote it to the mayor, and I want to read it to you. He never gave me a response. It says, Dear Mr. Mayor, my name is Andrea Morgan. I'm the disabled lady with the rolling walker. I heard you say earlier towards the beginning of the meeting that Mike Tomasi and Andrea Morgan can wait and speak last. I don't understand why. First of all, the only council meeting I've ever spoke at was 2 weeks ago on Tuesday, January the 11th. I was at the Civic Auditorium last Wednesday night, January the 19th, for a while, but I left and never spoke due to too much pain and fatigue. Yet, Mr. Norris got to speak last Tuesday night and attempted to speak the following night on Wednesday night and even spoke tonight, and I don't understand that either. Now, due to my disabilities, it's very difficult for me to sit up for any length of time. Therefore, I think I should be one of the people to be able to get my 3 minutes in first. And so that way I can leave and come home and get comfortable. I would gratefully appreciate it if you could take 5 minutes of your time and respond to me. And I gave him my phone number, you know, because I didn't understand that. I mean, here he came out and announced Mike Tomasi and Andrea Morgan could speak last on Tuesday night, January the 25th, and I wasn't even there, which is kind of weird, you know, like, because remember Wednesday night, he said, you know, anybody who spoke last night, you can't, you know, speak tonight. And so here a week later, he announces that Andrea Morgan and Mike Tomasi can wait to speak last. And here I never even spoke on the 19th, nor was I there that night. But it made me angry enough that I wrote this short letter, stopped at Kinko's, made a copy, and then went down to the council chambers and handed it to the clerk for him, and never got a response, of course.
You know, I would encourage you, Andrea, to contact Leslie Cook tomorrow and ask her, first of all, by phone, if that letter was ever received. I mean, you know, whether it's been sent to Rotkin. You can also leave a message, and anybody out there can do the same, on Rotkin's voicemail. 420-5020
yeah.
is the general council number.
Yeah, I know that
I believe
number.
Rotkin is 420-5023, if you want to go specifically to him, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure. Maybe my producer knows about that and can give me a quick...
But that was the first thing. You know, I mean, I'd never really had a problem with them because I've got not, you know, I got distracted from local politics for a while because I was busy being a mom.
Well, you know, as a disabled person, I think, you know, that they would, you know, Fitzmaurice usually makes a great show of showing great concern for people with disabilities and so forth, though. And indeed, he was, as I said, the only one who voted against this,
I know.
Screw the disabled thing that Rotkin passed.
I know. I wanted to actually kind of call him and leave a message on his voicemail saying, hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, that really kind of made me angry. I mean, what is going on with that? Oh, you get to speak for 3 minutes on one item, but you want to speak on anything else? You only get 1 minute? And
it is,
I mean,
pretty outrageous. For those who want to have this reversed, I would encourage people to call the city council at 420-5020 and tell them you want this matter revisited at the next council meeting and reversed. I also encourage people to go to Indie Media and look at the letter I wrote and the suggestions I made and read aloud. In terms of your particular situation, Megan, it's possible...
Call me Andrea, if you would, please. It's just in honor of my daughter.
I'm sorry, Andrea.
It's okay. That's
yeah.
okay.
That if... it may be that one of the reasons that there are different kinds of rules governing different kinds of comment periods. It's
mm-hmm.
kind of complicated. Oral communication, which is, you know, you talk 3 minutes on any
right,
subject,
right.
is the thing where he puts people at the end of the line.
Yeah.
And actually, in the view of people in Sacramento who I've talked to are the head of the First Amendment Coalition, that's
mm-hmm.
not legal. It's actually first come, first serve. You can't, even if you've spoken at the last meeting, you know, if you're there at the head of the line, each meeting is a new blank slate.
Right.
So Rotkin is improper in his process. But then again, every mayor has been doing that in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
I have another person about to call in, but
yeah.
let me, is there anything more you want to conclude with?
Not right at the moment. If I, you know, I'll probably call you on Sunday for talk about this or something else that's come up. I just can't think anything right offhand. But yeah, that just really irritated me the other day. And I don't know. I think it's going to cause a lot of controversy when people get up to the microphone expecting to have 3 minutes, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're going to be told they have 60 seconds.
Right. Well, of course, he's going to announce at the beginning of every session that now you have this complicated rule about consent agenda items and administrative agenda items. And remember, that won't affect most people who come to the oral communications, because oral communications, you will still have 3 minutes.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So, but, I mean, that really means, however, if you want to talk about the items that they're really taking
mm-hmm.
action on, you will
yeah.
have less time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, so thank you for calling in, and call in again.
Yeah, I'll talk to you on Sunday.
All right, then.
Okay, talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Andrea. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this, of course, is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Phone number to call in, 427-3772. On Sunday at noon, I want to announce special guest will be calling in from Arcata, California, City Council Member Dave Meserve, a legend in his own time. Meserve has authored a series of controversial and successful resolutions at the Arcata City Council, including U.S. out of Iraq, sanctuary zone in Iraq for, in Arcata for Iraq, for war protesters, all kinds of stuff. We got an incoming call, though. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there.
This is John Chilkin.
What's up, John?
I just wanted to clarify something. Are you saying that if you speak for 3 minutes at the World Communications, then you're only allowed 1 minute on each item after that or something?
No, no. It only has to do with administrative items. Administrative items are items usually on the afternoon agenda after the consent agenda and that are not public hearings. That's about it's about a third of the items on the agenda usually. They have to do with commission reports, sometimes grants, appointments. It doesn't have to it has nothing to do with oral communications. So you can talk if you're able to talk, they let you talk at oral communications for 3 minutes, and often people can't because there are too many people to be fit into oral communications, and unlike the Board of Supervisors, where they extend oral communications to cover every single person who wants to speak, City Council will only allow 30 minutes of oral communications. It's only going to be on administrative items. You'll get 3 minutes on the first administrative item and 1 minute on each successive item, unless they want to hear from you. In which case, you can raise your hand and you can get them to say, "We'll give you more time."
Oh, so
and on the consent agenda.
So it's again discriminatory then, depending on your content, most likely.
It is based upon whether they think they want to hear from you. The exception to that is, according to the wording of their rule, if you are the main subject of the item under discussion, if it majorly affects your property or some such thing, then you get additional time. But that would happen in any case because usually council members give people who are primarily concerned with an item slightly more time, and understandably and properly so. The problem, of course, is generally they're engaging in a massive constriction of time. And on the consent agenda, of course, you're way constricted. You get a total of 5 minutes for any and all items you pull as a total amount of time, probably condensed into one continuous speech period. Any other questions on that subject?
So there's two types of things. There's consent agenda and what else?
Consent agenda is the first thing that appears on the afternoon agenda, and then there's administrative agenda that happens after the consent agenda, also
so
usually in the afternoon.
Administrative agenda items you're limited to?
In the consent agenda, you're limited to a total of 5 minutes for all items, and you have to state which items you're going to talk about and talk about them, I believe, one after another without stopping.
In the administrative agenda, you're limited to 1 minute each.
In the administrative agenda, you're limited to 3 minutes for the first administrative item and then 1 minute for each successive item.
Okay.
According to Rotkin's Rules of Order.
But the administrative items, it looks like they can discriminate based on who it is that's talking.
Well, they can do that on the consent agenda, too. If they want to give you more time to talk on the consent agenda, they can also do that.
Yeah, so then you have another lawsuit going for discrimination.
If anybody has the money or the time or the energy
right.
to do it, yeah, that's for sure.
Okay.
Now, I understand you're also working with the Human Rights Organization. You have a new time and place you're meeting?
I wasn't aware that we have a new time and place yet.
Oh, I thought you had that you were meeting at the Homeless Services Center in the dining room. That was what I was told at the last Huff meeting.
That was on our agenda to do that, but that was at the last meeting. I don't remember them.
Okay, well then let's. I guess
so
your next meeting is. I think your next meeting is still at Sin Fronteras, right?
Yeah.
That's
at 4 p.m.
At 4 p.m. on Saturday.
Right.
That's right. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about? Okay. Thanks
right.
for calling, John.
Hey, boy.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Expecting to hear from the man with the marijuana over the hill. He's not really over the hill, but he is over the hill. I'm not quite sure how he put that. That's Jim Losey. Hope to hear from him shortly. Roger Mensch is going to be showing up on Club Cruise, which is the twice weekly television show on community TV at 7 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I believe it's channel 25, or is it channel 27? Who knows? Anyway, here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Is this the new dispensary in Santa Cruz?
We got the dope if you are not so dopey.
Oh, great, dude, because I'm a vendor. I got some really stinky stuff, but I got to unload it quick here. It's getting moldy. Can you help me?
Bring it over, and we will make use of it. Maybe we can actually loosen up the city council with some of it.
Right on. Anyways, how are you doing there?
I'm good. Of course, this is the notorious gym, Area 420 Losey.
That's right.
Lousy Losey, as some have called you.
That's right, Losey. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so what's cooking there?
Oh, not much. Actually, I was just trying to call in a few minutes ago. I had Roger on the line. We were just catching up a little bit.
Roger Minch, we're going to send him to 7 years for cultivating and possessing marijuana in early May.
Yeah.
That Roger Minch?
Yeah, I hope that's not. I hope that that's not going to happen, but we will see. And he's. It sounds like he's getting his fundraising benefit together, and people should be pretty interested in checking that out. You met with him yesterday, I think.
I did. We had a club cruise, which is this video filming, and as I mentioned before, it's going to be probably be playing next Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. Hopefully, maybe the week after. Not sure.
Yeah. Well, I think he's moving forward there. I think he just needs some money and he needs some publicity help. And I was telling him again that we'll try to get the word out for him. And I wish him the best. I think he has the right last name for a federal court case or a precedent-setting case.
Quite a mensch.
Yes, quite a mensch, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part is, in Angel Raich's case, she apparently gave herself the name Angel, so it wasn't exactly cosmic or that she. I mean, she did give herself the name, but in Roger's case, he was already a mensch before he got a chance to be a mensch.
Yeah, I wish I had more information on other medical marijuana cases that are currently being pursued by our fine DA Bob Lee. I don't know the name of your DA over the hill. I know that you have a pretty horrible DA's office some years ago when we were supporting the guy who smashed the Columbus statue. I don't know if you remember that incident.
Oh no, I don't remember that.
Yeah, there was an activist who on Columbus Day, or what do we call it, National Native Extermination Day. He took a sledgehammer to the statue of Columbus in front of the San Jose City Hall. His name was Jim Costner.
Huh.
He's a local activist who. He's often indiscreet. I didn't like the fact that he did this because it's tied him up for the rest of his life and in restitution, and he went to jail, and it's really made a mess of things for him.
Yeah, San Jose, unless you really want to make a point, there's better cities than San Jose to try something like that in.
But we were able to get him out of jail on bail after bunches of us went to the DA's office and threatened to sit in because they were screwing around with the rules. So I don't know about the DA over there, but I know the DA over here. The fact that he even took Mensch's case a year and a half after, this raid, after the 420 regulations went in, SB 420, after the medical marijuana card process was begun, to take him to trial for this relatively small amount of marijuana he was growing and giving out only to patients with cards for financial compensation, to me, seemed outrageous. It seemed to me like the only way I could fathom it was that they were trying to avoid a civil lawsuit for false arrest.
Well, I don't know. I think in a previous show you were getting at the idea. The Santa Cruz County does accept a $250,000 grant from the Homeland Security.
That's true.
And I think you were just on target with that because if you look at the way the grant is written up, Santa Clara County gets the same thing. In fact, several years ago, Santa Clara County actually had the highest rate of big crop busts, and so I guess all the big growers moved away from Santa Clara County. And I'm not saying they grow the most here. I'm just saying that they had the highest rate of busts here for big plants. Roger's case, when you try to compare him to some grower that's out there with 5,000 plants, Roger's was very small time. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. That's the point. And I'm just Bob Lee. Why are you doing this? 454. What is it? 454. I've got to get him on the.
Oh, I've got Bob on the other line here. Hang on, I'll get him on.
Have you really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Nice of you. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, what I don't understand is this: if they want to chalk up their brownie points and their notch on the wall, then that's too bad. But once they've done that, they don't need to charge the guy and prosecute him too. They have the arrest. They have their notch. And again, I don't know every last specific of the case, but from what came out in the court case, it just doesn't sound like this is fair at all.
For those who are interested, his phone number, and you can't call him now because, as I mentioned before, they don't allow you to call off hours. They don't put in an answering machine. I'm sure that's quite intentional. But the number when you during business hours is 454-2400. That's for D.A. Bob Lee. But you can email him now. It's D-A-T-0-1-5, O as in 0-1-5, DAT015@co.santa-cruz.ca.us. Again, DAT015@co.santa-cruz.ca.us. You can go to Indie Media and get that email address. And I think that the more people that email in Bob Lee, you know, that he is abusing public funds, he's abusing the public trust, because I believe we voted for him thinking he was going to lighten up on the drug war. That's what he told me when he was running for this office.
Yeah, it seems like you know, up until the guilty verdict came in, or up until it went to trial, pressure on the DA's office, you know, more pressure might have helped. They are, and this is something I don't quite understand. You know, now let's go back for a sec. When you talk about the incident over here with the Columbus statue, was that George Kennedy was the district attorney, or?
You know, that could be. It was the Kennedy statue, I believe, was smashed in '99 or.
The Columbus statue.
Columbus statue.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't built a Kennedy statue here
yet.
No,
sorry.
That's okay.
Not yet.
They
no.
will. They will. He's
hopefully not a Scott Kennedy statue.
Well, and he's going to be out in 2006. I think he announced he's not going to run for another term. So there's like a big question as to who's going to run for DA now. There's one woman named Karen Sununu who's really nice, and actually I think she's pretty sympathetic to the medical marijuana cause.
Yeah, I think it was actually 2000 or 2001 when the statue was smashed.
Yeah, well, he was probably there, but you know, again, I don't know. It's a valid issue, but it's a different issue. They've actually been pretty good here in this county on medical marijuana. There is a high profile case in San Jose that's still slowly moving forward. But aside from that, you know, they could have come and raided me many, many times with the information I was giving as to what I was doing.
Well, it's just, I mean, they obviously pick and choose. I mean, if you're a WHAM member, you know, you're sacrosanct. But if you got on for one way or another, their little drug task force list just, you know, accidentally. And then if they screw up by going after you, apparently they're not going to, you know, hold back. Although again, I'm extrapolating from this one case, and I don't know. I think we need to do research on what's going on with the drug war. And of course, what we really need to do is major jury nullification flyering at the courthouse to again alert the community to the fact that when they're on the jury, they can say no and hang the jury, even if the judge doesn't like it. You know, I mean.
No, that's really a good idea. You know, and let me ask you this about the district attorney's offices. So the sentencing, that's just done by the judge, right? There's no jury on the sentencing? Or
unless it's a death penalty case.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a little bit late for jury nullification in this case. But on the district attorney side, you know, I was just trying to put two and two together this morning. They are a publicly elected office, but, like, and you were talking about the Davis or the Brown Act, I'm sorry. Are they subject to the Brown Act? Does the DA hold any public meetings? It's never occurred to me before.
No, I don't. The DA, because the DA is not a legislative body. The DA is a prosecutorial body. It's actually part of the executive, I guess you might say. You know.
Yeah, because we actually have another event coming up on April 16th, and it's going to be a big town hall meeting. Actually, we've located it in the Board of Supervisors chambers, so we're going to try to videotape this and have something real nice to work with. But
the Board of Supervisors is responsible for, you know, I mean, they can issue statements that can have impact on the DA, and you can also go to the DA en masse, as those of us who are, example, members of the Capitola 13 did a couple of years ago when we were arrested outside the Capitola recruiting station, and DA Bob Lee or one of his underlings was trying to dick us around. When we showed up for our hearings, we all just started sitting in and singing in his office chamber area, and he quickly came out and said, "Oh, okay, well, we'll, you know," and he gave us some assurances that actually turned out to be true, and the charges were all dropped.
Huh.
So, you know, you can have an impact. You haven't got the Brown Act on your side, but you have direct action and the power of the press and, you know, the power of the community on your side if you're able to mobilize it.
That's right. We got the People Act.
Hopefully.
So, yeah, well, I think that's something that has to be done. Again, you know, I think that the DA has been pretty good over here. The one thing I don't like about the district attorneys, and, you know, maybe it is just their job, but anytime I've called and tried to get a specific interpretation, you know, a lot of Senate Bill 420 is gray. You know, like, what does mature mean? When is a plant really and truly mature? Well, there's no legal bright lines. And so that's one thing the DA has never done for me, regardless of which, you know, specific person I talk to. Now, just this morning, I was speaking with a guy who's now the narcotics investigator, but he's the assistant DA in charge of narcotics. And I was inviting him to be a speaker on this panel that we're going to have. And he basically said he didn't want to appear because he thought that the public might think they were giving legal advice. And I just think that I'm going to redouble my efforts to get someone from their office out there. You know, they are an elected office, and they should have something to say about the whole issue, you know, just in a general sense that wouldn't affect any ongoing case.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like he's trying to duck you. I mean, you know, anybody... it's interesting.
Oh, you know, the guy's busy. You can't blame him for trying to brush me off once, right?
Well, Jim, I'm going to have to brush you off now because I got to roll pretty quickly. But I know that you've got this event coming up on 4:20. Now.
Yeah, well, I'll call in Sunday morning and we'll talk about it.
Let's do it. And for people who want to reach you before then, who are just terribly eager to find out more what's going on over there at Area 420, what can they do?
Well, they should go to AREA 420, Area 420. It rhymes with Area 51, kind of. Anyways, just area420.com. And we have flyers posted up there if you want to check out the flyers for the town hall and for the April 24th barbecue. So check it out. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Have a great night. Bye.
You too, man. And we're going to start wrapping it up a little bit early here because when Uncle Dennis comes trucking in, there is no stopping him. That man and his music, they rock. And he's going to be rocking for 3 hours from the cream to the dregs. So stay tuned for him starting at 8 o'clock. If you want to reach me off air, as I mentioned before, 423-HUFF is the number to call, 831-423-4833. I really promise I will update the message very, very soon because the next HUFF meeting is no longer at Baker Square. Baker Square, for all of you sentimentalists, closes in 2 nights. So if you want to, get some of that Baker Square pie, you better get your butt down there because there ain't going to be no more Baker Square after that. They're apparently going out of business. Time to squat the building and take it over, probably. So we're going to be meeting in the basement of the county building at what I call the Cattle Prod Cafe. Actually, that's sort of a whimsical name. We used to call it the Cattle Prod Cafe because they used to harass homeless people for going in there back in 1990. That hasn't happened lately. So they aren't the Cattle Prod Cafe. They're just the cafe. They got actually a name. I'm not sure what they are. But that's where we're going to be meeting at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning. That's where HUFF will be holding its new meeting. So check it out. And, of course, the Human Rights Organization, I believe, will be meeting at Sin Fronteras, 9/11 Cedar Street at 4 o'clock on Saturday, for those of you interested in the fighting the downtown ordinances and the sleeping ban. So I'm going to be coming back on Sunday with more info. Special guest, as I mentioned before, Dave Meserve, Arcata City Council member, who is going to be talking about the latest move to move beyond U.S. out of Iraq resolutions, which he successfully pushed through the city council last year to another resolution that I believe has been pressed through or at least is on the edge of being pressed through. I'm not quite sure where it is, having to do with essentially declaring the area sanctuary for war resistors. And we're going to be talking with him. I'm hoping to have Roger Mensch on the show as well. I wasn't able to get him on this particular time, but I'm working on it. So we'll hopefully get into that. And a couple of other things are coming up too. Hoping to have on the air Larry from San Diego, Larry Milligan, that's his name. Milligan is an activist who's actually pursuing a federal lawsuit against the city of San Diego to stop them from arresting homeless people for sleeping. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing here in Santa Cruz. So get out there and check out the overpass on Friday, U.S. out of Iraq. Go up on campus, check out Students Against the War at the same time if you want to prefer to make contact with the students. They're up in the Bay Tree Conference Center. And then come on back down, and maybe you'll give a listen to my show on Sunday when I come back at 9:30 in the morning.
Maybe not.
And that's Uncle Dennis, in case you were wondering. He's an ardent fan of my show. And perhaps we can all get together and do a little rocking. We can rock out. Hey, Arrogant Bastard Ale has entered the studio as well. I'm calling the FCC. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathurst Pierre's Broadsides.
Smoky haze, Sunday morning, the fire is out, Sunday morning,
from there to here. Down the road, Route 25, they found this boy. He was barely alive. Jesus is on the wire, so far away, higher and higher. Jesus is on the wire. Ice, almost dead. They said that he slept with guys. They said that he deserved to die. Jesus is on.
Eric Clapton from many, many, many years ago now. That album is now 13 years old. I'm Uncle Dennis. I'm considerably older than that, and I'm here for the next 3 hours bringing you music of the 60s and the 70s on From the Cream to the Dregs. We will be opening up our Arrogant Bastard Ale a little later on, but right now I wanted to let you know that if you're not at the Electric Auto Association and Felt and Flow joint nonprofit benefit at the Union Coffee House tonight, get over there. The EAA and Felt and Flow announced they're joining a list of organizations sponsoring the Green Words and Music event. That's tonight at the Union Coffee House in Santa Cruz. Electric vehicles will be featured at this event, along with information ranging from area and regional watershed maps, renewable energy updates, to logging and forest legislation news, in addition to poetry reading and a CD release of original music by Tom Harvey. All this happening from 6 to 9 p.m. tonight. So once again, get on over to the Union Coffee House. I'm not sure you can listen to free radio over there, but you can certainly hear some interesting stuff and get some interesting information. Anyway, we'll be back after a lot more music, including this one, which I haven't queued up yet. let's see. Let's try this one.
Loving you isn't the right.